Is it weird? I'm kind of proud of that in a weird way.
No, trust me, I get it. People who have only seen me for the first time, they don't understand that I know exactly what you're going through. My wife asked me to stop losing weight because it didn't look right anymore.
For those of you that that are not on the stream, which you should be, all right? Facebook.com/TheFanUpstate, The Fan Upstate on YouTube, The Rob Brown Show on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. I've dropped now 54 pounds, I think. And I got told by my own dear sweet mother during the break that I gotta stop. She's like, you gotta stop. You're done. I said, why? She said, your head is no longer proportionate to your body. Apparently I've turned myself into a Rob Brown Show bobblehead. Apparently I'm the JD McDonough of the Fan Upstate at this point. And in a weird, like, I'm proud of that. And now I'm now more self-conscious about my fat head than I was about my fat ass a couple of months ago.
There's really nothing you can do about your head, though.
There's not.
I mean, your head is your head.
It's a 7 5/8, and there's nothing I can do about it. All right? I can't lose weight in the head. All right? It is what it is.
Well, you did lose weight. I mean, but once you get down to skull, I mean, that's it.
Down to skull. There's, no, there's yeah, I mean, nothing
and
left.
You're pretty much down to skull. You can't go further than that.
Your head is not proportionate to your body. Oh, man. All right. We got a lot to get to, a lot to talk about here on the radio program as we roll up till 10 o'clock. As we mentioned, Lulu Kessin of the Greenville News will talk South Carolina Gamecock football with us at 8 o'clock this morning. Rashad Beard at 8:40 to talk about the Carolina Panthers getting set for a showdown with Jim Harbaugh and his Chargers coming up this weekend. And we will have Fight Club with the great one Lonzo coming up at 9:20 this lovely morning. So make sure you stick around for all that as we have some fun here on the radio broadcast. But it is 7:03 in the morning. You, my dear friends, are just that much closer to getting yourself to work. Here's the good news. The good news is that you only have a little bit longer, all right? You only got a few more hours until the weekend is hoisted upon us. And once the weekend is hoisted upon us, it's a football weekend, a full football weekend. Football tonight, football tomorrow, football all day Saturday, football all day Sunday, football Monday night. We got a five-night streak of football, which means we got to talk football. We got to get into football. So let's do it. Let's talk some football and everything else, because football ain't the only thing going on. It is, to the chagrin of many of you, baseball season. Still, to this day, right now, baseball. Got about 18 games left. It's NASCAR season. Playoffs underway. We got to talk about that. WNBA. We're going to talk that because there is a WNBA item in the water cooler cheat sheet that also correlates to the South Carolina Gamecocks. All that coming up when we do this. My head is not disproportionate to my body. I look like a normal person.
Damn ring light.
I don't know. That's what's his name? Who used to be the quarterback for Atlanta, and he's now Matt Ryan.
Matt Ryan?
You got the Matt Ryan neck showing up. You don't see that?
The Matt neck?
Your neck looks longer. because your shoulders have gone down because of the weight. They were you lost some shoulder pads, so I mean they're down there.
Okay. Well, I mean again.
Just get the Matt Ryan salt and pepper hair. Look out!
Oh, it's coming, dude. I'm getting a rogue streak right in the front. Like just that one little, like there's only 9 or 10, but they're right in the front. You know, I'm getting there. I'm getting very very silver foxy right now. You know. Hey, the water cooler cheat sheet, top 3 sports stories you need to know before you get to the office this morning and talk sports with your coworkers or your boss or whoever it is that you're wasting time with. Rhonda has texted me now in all caps. I said it was probably the camera angle. No, you're like the third person who said something.
It's not the camera angle.
It's not.
It's fine,
though. I just got a big ass head and less body carrying it around. That's all.
Well, it's not. It's long. So I mean, it is. I mean,
it is. It is. It is, and it is what it is.
You need to grow a longer beard, and then that'll take care of that.
I did that once. I got a white trash beard, dude. It's not. I wish I could. I'll tell you what it was, because I told Courtney this the other day.
You moved to my county.
If I can get down to like 205, which I'm actually thinking about doing. If I can get to 205, great one. I might shave. All right, I may go beardless for a hot minute, because the beard is only there for one reason.
To separate the head from the neck.
No, to cover up the extra chins that I carried around for a very long time.
Is that what you're doing? Trying to see if they're still there underneath?
Yes.
Like
yes.
Maybe you need some of that epiderm stuff that tightens up the skin.
There's always going to be a little bit, because at the end of the day, just that second chin is genetic. It's just how much you pump in there.
And
all right?
You are almost 40.
And I am almost 40. But
that's a shock value. I think you should do it.
I thought about it. Not for the wedding. After the wedding.
Yeah, I'm not sure I let you in the building.
But I think like, when I get back.
Who the heck are you?
And the reason would be, I am, and I promise you we're going to the water cooler cheat sheet here in a second. But this is it's got to happen. The biggest problem for me is that I am really locked into Halloween costumes. I got to have some costume that is someone bearded, which is why it's always Macho Man Randy Savage or Coach Beard from Ted Lasso was on the docket this year. But if I get myself down to like 205, and get rid of chins number 3 and 4, and just have chins number 1 and 2, I might shave just for Halloween, just because it opens up the door to do whatever I want.
I'm just saying, if you shave and you wear your hockey jersey, you know you can go as.
I hate you so much.
Cameron was in Egypt land, let my Cameron go.
So much. Item number one. The Atlanta Braves found themselves in a spot last night tied with the New York Metropolitans for the final wild card spot, and then they went and they lost to the Washington Nationals. 5-1 was your final last night. Max Fried was tagged with his 9th loss of the year. 6 innings pitched, gave up 11 hits, 4 earned runs, K'd 6 before he was removed from the game. The Nationals' Jake Irvin went 6 innings, gave up just 2 hits and 1 earned run, K'd 5. The Braves' offense, 6 total hits in the game last night. 2 from Harris, 2 from Soler, 1 from Olsen, 1 from Laureano, and that was it. That was the tally. Once again, you went from a night, and this is what the Braves have done. You went from a night 2 nights ago where you had 15 hits and 4 home runs, or 16 hits and 4 home runs in all of these numbers, to turning around and going 6 hits. Lucky to get 6, a couple of them late in the game, and you couldn't score runs against the Nationals. This is the reality of sad Braves fan. Sad Braves fan. The Atlanta Braves now 79-67, a dozen games over 500, which is good. The problem is, the Mets did win last night, meaning that the New York Mets went from a tie to a full game up on the Bravos in the NL East. Nobody cares about that. The Phillies have won this division. All right, they're 8 games up on the Mets. It's about the third wild card spot. It's about, can the Braves get healthy and go on a run into the wild card? Well, it wouldn't matter right now because they're not a wild card team, a full game back behind the Mets, and this is the worst part. The Mets and the Braves both off today, so no change in the record today. Both Atlanta and New York will enter tomorrow separated by a single game. The Mets are about to start a 3-game set against the Phillies. The Braves are about to start a 4-game set against the Dodgers. The good news is, with the exception of a 3-game series against the Mets later in the month, this is the last uber competitive series. Let me take that back. The Braves have made every series uber competitive for no reason. This is the last series against a top tier NL squad. Okay? So, that's interesting. The Braves have a 4-gamer against the Dodgers. The Mets start a 3-gamer against the Phillies on the road, but they do have another 4-game set against the Phillies later on this month at home. So the good news for Atlanta, if there is any, and if you give a crap enough to look for a silver lining, is that the rest of the schedule from now till the end of the regular season, it's easier for Atlanta than it is for the Mets. It's an easier path to the regular season finale for Atlanta than it is for the Mets. The bad news is the Braves come out and get 16, 17 hits one night and then turn around and lose to the damn Nationals the next. I don't know if it matters. I don't know if it matters. If the Braves were going to make any run, they need to be heating up now, and they're doing the opposite. Item number two. WNBA last night, big matchup. Me and the boys actually sat down in a nice little cigar spot last night and watched a little Las Vegas Aces taking on the Indiana Fever. Aja Wilson, former South Carolina Gamecock, staring down Caitlin Clark, the former Iowa Hawkeye. And it was Wilson who got the better of the competition as the Aces win 86-75. But it was Wilson's accomplishment that is the story that makes the water cooler cheat sheet. Late in the first half, an assist from Chelsea Gray. Wilson jab left, took the fellow former South Carolina Gamecock Aaliyah Boston off the dribble, pulled up at the free throw line, knocked out a jumper. That was her 940th point. That was the WNBA record for single season points. She knocked it down with four regular season games left to play. She had 27 at the end of the night. That brought her to 956 points. She surpassed last year's previous single season record of 931 scored by Jewel Lloyd. Aja Wilson now holds the WNBA single season scoring record. And she is 44 points away from becoming the first WNBA player to score 1,000 points in a single season. Aja Wilson is winning the MVP this year. That race is booked, cooked, and done. She is the MVP. Now the question mark is, how many points is she going to score? Aja Wilson had a hot minute there where she was on a streak of 41-plus point games. She's getting to 1,000. Question mark is, how high above 1,000? Is Wilson going to get to? This is going to go down as one of the most remarkable individual seasons in the history of the W. And it's a former Gamecock that's up there. And by the way, how dope is it that in order for a former Gamecock to set the WNBA individual single season scoring record, she had to beat another Gamecock in Aaliyah Boston to get there and do it. Pretty spectacular. The influence of Dawn and that program in the WNBA is tangible and palpable, and it came through last night. Congrats to Aja Wilson. 956 points, highest point total ever for a single season, passing Jewel Lloyd, and she's still got four games to go. She will get past 1,000. The question mark is, how high above 1,000? Let's get to item number three. I bounced around about where I'm going to go with this one, but I think it's got to be this story. Conference expansion is still happening. I said I thought we were at the point that there was only two conferences that might expand in the near future. One of them was the Big 12. One of them was the Pac-12. I think the SEC and the Big 10 are going to stand pat for at least a little while. Now we know the next round of conference expansion. Four schools are set to announce today that they will depart the Mountain West Conference and join the Pac-12. According to ESPN, the Pac-12 Board of Directors unanimously approved applications from Boise State, Colorado State, San Diego State, and Fresno State for membership to begin in the 2026-27 academic year. They will join Oregon State and Washington State, the conference's only two remaining schools after the league collapsed in the summer of 2023. The Mountain West did say that they intend to hold the departing four schools to their signed agreements, which means the schools will each owe them $18 million and a two-year notification of departure. That's why the 2026 season. Here's the more interesting thing. The Pac-12 is subject to $43 million in poaching fees for taking these schools away from the Mountain West. So the Mountain West is, they will now probably go look for some much lower level FBS schools as they are dedicated to staying open. Of course they are. Every conference is. They will look to find somebody, and they're going to have quite a bit of money in the coffers from the Pac-12 and these departing schools in order to hold that search. And the Pac-12 gets to live on. Now, is it going to be a stellar conference? No. It's going to look like a lot of other conferences that are kind of afterthoughts if we're keeping it a buck. But hey, maybe having the banner of the Pac-12 to play under, the resources of the Pac-12 that even if the teams are gone, the resources are still in play. The TV contracts that the Pac-12 has for these schools, maybe they do take an upward trajectory. Maybe in a couple of years we are talking about the new and improved, it won't be new and improved, the new and respectable Pac-12. I don't know. What I do know is You will hear that the Pac-12 is growing later today. Boise State, Colorado State, San Diego State, and Fresno State all joining the Pac-2 slash 6 slash 12 in 2026-2027. There's your water cooler cheat sheet. Top three sports stories going on in the world of sports when we come back here in just a minute from right now. Let's take a look at some of the games going on around college football tonight. We'll start turning our attention towards the future as we got a big football weekend coming up. Lulu Cassidy of the Greenville News will join us in about 45 minutes to talk Carolina football. An hour and 40 minutes from now, Rashad Beard of the Panther Nation podcast joins us 9:20. Fight Club with the great one all coming up on the Rob Brown Show when the Fan Upstate. Talk Carolina Panthers here with you for just a moment. That's not even true. I don't even want to talk about Carolina Panthers with you. I want to talk about Bryce Young with you for just a minute. Because I spent yesterday, I told you the other day on, Tuesday. Tuesday I went and I watched the All-22 of a handful of different games, one of them being Carolina in New Orleans. And I'll keep it a buck. I went to go watch and see what made Derek Carr stand out so much. Because Derek Carr had himself a hero ball weekend. Derek Carr picked himself up a from the Rob Brown Show TMFINR award on Tuesday because of his performance Sunday in the demolition job of the Carolina Panthers performed by the New Orleans Saints. Well, I got into watching a little bit of Bryce Young as well. And I do want to start and make this abundantly clear out of the gate. Bryce Young was bad, okay? Y'all heard me say it. Write it down. Quote me. Put it down. September 12th, 2024. Bryce Young was bad. However, I am preaching the gospel of patience. I am begging you all, take a deep breath. And relax. Now, I made the argument a couple of times this week. I'm not going to run you through the whole thing. Nuts and bolts version. First-year head coach, second-year play caller, first-year play caller for this team. Of your offensive line, two are brand new, a third move positions, three out of your five offensive linemen are playing on a different spot, two of them on a different team. Your wide receiver core. Your number one wide receiver is new to the team. Your number three wide receiver was your number one wide receiver last year. He's playing in an all-new position. It's not new to him, but it's new to him in this offense. Your number two wide receiver was your number four wide receiver last year. Your number four wide receiver this year was not on the team. It's an all-new wide receiver core. The only thing consistent you have on the offensive side of the football is your running backs, and let's say your running backs were pretty remarkably mediocre last year. And you spent all your resources this offseason building up the offensive side of the football. It was always going to take some time, but it has fallen on Bryce Young to be the hero. Play you a clip here. It's got a little bit of length to it, but it's three different voices. Jason Fitz, Jory Epstein, and Frank Schwab. They are NFL analysts for YahooSports.com. I clipped all three of their thoughts on Bryce Young together, and here is what they had to say. All right, so that's Jason Fitz from YahooSports.com and his take on BY. And I want to address a couple of things, and then I have a present for Lonzo. And I need you all on the stream for this, facebook.com/thefanupstate, the Fan Upstate on YouTube, the Rob Brown Show on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. I'm going to give you a couple of minutes to get there before I bring my present to the stream for you all, okay? If you suddenly think that, like, the situation is all butterflies and rainbows, you are wrong. The situation is not good in Carolina. It didn't get fixed. Did it get better? Yes. Yes, it got better. The situation got better. Is it fixed? Hell no. No, absolutely not. I just ran you through the problems just on the offense, which is an offense you put all the resources into fixing. All right? It ain't fixed. There's still a lot that's got to be course corrected offensively and defensively. This whole thing that, like, oh, all the excuses are gone. He's got to be a pro. No, they're not gone. They're not gone, and they're not gone for a guy whose growth was stunted last year because of Frank Reich, because of David Tepper, because of this team as a whole. Yeah, and I know what I did there. And I didn't think about it until literally right now, and I'm very mad that I did, but I'm standing on it.
I'm not saying anything.
The point here that I think we have to lean on is the situation's not better. Scratch that. The situation is better. Situation ain't fixed, and anybody who says that it is just wrong and doesn't know ball. So the problem I have with the take from Jason Fitz here is not that he said Bryce Young played poorly. He did. All right? He missed guys. The two picks he threw, egregious. One to JT Sanders, one to Adam Thielen that he just freaking missed. He also had a lot of throws, and this is the part that frustrates me. Again, go back and watch that game again. There's also some throws that he made. Some good throws that he made. Some challenging throws that he made. There were some good throws in this game from BY9. But we're all going to disregard the good to dial in on the bad. And I know that's hysterical coming from me. I get it. Because I'm the guy that says, you talk about the bad because the bad can be fixed. And I think we have done that. But to talk about the bad and ignore completely the good is where you make a mistake, in my opinion. We are not talking about the good. There were a handful of challenging throws that Bryce Young made, but we're dialing in on the two picks. Okay? Now, I am going to present something to you here on the stream, facebook.com/thefanupstate, The Fan Upstate on YouTube, The Rob Brown Show on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch. Ladies and gentlemen, it's graph time, baby! Bringing back the graph. I've missed graphs. Let's do a little graph. In fact, I want to dial in on the graph. This, and let's be clear, this is a very small sample size. This is 1 week of NFL football. This is one game. This is a graph of all 32 teams in the National Football League. All 32 starting quarterbacks from week one in the NFL. Okay? And on this graph, your x-axis is the average separation of wide receivers when targeted. When a ball was thrown at them, what was their average separation? And on the y-axis, the accuracy rate of quarterbacks. And so obviously, you'd like the further to the right the graph goes, which is the more open wide receivers are, the higher you'd like to see that quarterback's name on the y-axis in terms of accuracy, right? Now, we talked about Derek Carr. Derek Carr, of course, a winner of week one award. Derek Carr's way up here in the top right corner. Derek Carr, and keep in mind, I do want to point out, this has to do with defensive backs too. And the Saints do have one of the best defensive back crews in football. That is something I do not think people have talked enough about. The New Orleans Saints have one of the best defensive backfields in the entire National Football League. So just by that, you are going to see anybody who plays them. And again, small sample size. It's just 1 week. But I would be willing to bet that after this weekend, after week two, the Dallas Cowboys, Dak Prescott, kind of right down here, just a little bit off the average, right? Got less wide receiver separation to throw to, but also was less accurate than the average NFL quarterbacks this weekend. I'll be willing to make you a bet. We pull the same graph next week. Dak's star is a little bit further over in this area because of the defensive backs. So Carolina, who is down here, the furthest left and not bottomest, but as far as accuracy goes, there were four quarterbacks less accurate than Bryce Young in week one. Jalen Hurts, Deshaun Watson, Jordan Love, Danny Dimes, the least accurate quarterback, and Anthony Richardson, who was the least accurate quarterback in NFL week one, according to Pro Football Focus, who put this data together. So you get a little bit of credit for Carolina, and you are up against one of the top, I'd say, six, five defensive backfields in football. But look at the separation that Bryce Young's receivers were getting. There were only three teams whose receivers provided less separation than Bryce Young's. Josh Allen's Bills, Matt Stafford's Rams, Kyler Murray's Cardinals. All right? Kyler Murray still, with a accuracy rating of about 42, 43%. Josh Allen, about 42-43%. Matt Stafford accuracy rating about 42-43%. Brock Purdy accuracy rating of about 41-42%. Bryce Young accuracy rating of about 29%. So the accuracy is behind Brock Purdy, Josh Allen, Matt Stafford, and Kyler Murray. What's the difference? Well, Brock Purdy's gone to a Super Bowl and has the best skill position set out there. Josh Allen's got no wide receivers, but he's Josh Allen, Josh Allen, Josh Allen. Matt Stafford has been a Pro Bowler for a very long time. And Kyler Murray is Kyler Murray. He's been in the league, what, 92 years and hasn't done anything with it yet? Bryce Young's down here, and it's a bad look. But he's also working with less receiver separation than all but three teams in the NFL, the Bills, Rams, and Cardinals. And by the way, the Rams lost Puka Nacua early in that game, so that hurt them a lot. And he's less accurate than everybody except Hurts, Watson, Love, Jones, and Richardson. My point here is Bryce Young does not play for a team that's fixed. You still have to get better at the wide receiver position. You still have to give him more to work with as a second-year rookie. This chart, once again, small sample size, just one game, but it should tell you that this is a growth project. If you expected him to just go, you know what's to the wall in week one, you're going to be sorely disappointed. Come back here in just a minute. The Rob Brown Show rolls on. It's the Fan Upstate. It is the Rob Brown Show. It is the Fan Upstate. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Great to have you. Robin the Great Malonzo here. There was a controversy that went down earlier this week. Did we talk about it Monday? Yeah, I think we talked about it Monday. Controversy went down to Tallahassee, Florida. After the Noles fell to 0-2 coming off of a 13-0 ACC championship last year, things have not been good down in Tallahassee, Florida. They went over to Dublin, Ireland and lost to Georgia Tech. They came back home the next week, took on the Boston College Eagles and dropped a game to them as well. And I think it is fair to say that this team is bad. Okay? The team is just bad. So, there was another controversy that popped up around the team besides the team just being bad. And that controversy was, apparently, the football team asked the athletic department to stop playing their tomahawk chop on third downs. Why? So that an in-house DJ could play music. Hip-hop music, EDM music, techno music, whatever they're going to play. And watching that game last week, I can tell you, it was annoying. But also, I acknowledge that I'm, you know, almost 40 years old and kind of a crotchety old guy at this point, right? I'm also a fan, and many of you don't believe me when I say this. I got told this yesterday when I was sitting in on Wire to Wire. That when I say, I actually do love the traditions and the pageantry of college football. I really do. I am pro NIL. I am pro portal. But I actually do love the traditions and the pageantry of college football. I don't think those are mutually exclusive things to want what I feel is the best for the players, but also say, I love the chop and the running down the hill and sandstorm and all these things that make college football special. I'm just saying if a kid doesn't want to be there, he shouldn't have to be there, right? So I hated that. I hated that. Apparently the athletic department kowtowed to the football team and decided that they were going to tell the band no more tomahawk chop on third down, which I know many of you Clemson fans have been down to Tallahassee for big games. You know, even if it is the bad guys, you know that on third down, when that chop gets played, when those drums start beating, and when 60,000+ Florida State fans start in unison doing the chant, it's good, man. It's good. It's fun. It's exciting. It's loud. It's energetic. It's a great moment. Well, Mike Norvell finds himself in a bit of a position here because on one hand, he's allowing these changes to be made. On the other hand, the team ain't that good. And as Willie Taggart can tell you, it's one thing to go in and thrive, succeed, and then make some changes. It's another thing to try to make changes and suck, right? The problem you bumped into is not that you changed the chop. It's that you changed the chop and, oh, by the way, you changed the chop and you're 0-2. A year after you reset expectations for this program, you're 0-2. Yesterday, Mike Norvell was asked about that situation. And Mike Norvell said, I want to hear them every second of every moment of the game. I mean, I think they're remarkable. It's what makes FSU special. Norvell went on to say he wants to continue to work with the Marching Chiefs. Quote, I think we've honored the tradition. I think we've offered the people that make this university special. We're going to continue to do that. I was told that it was like that at every game last year, too, and I never heard about it last year because we didn't lose any games at home last year. We definitely are going to get that right. I absolutely want to make sure that the Marching Chiefs are a strong presence in everything we're doing throughout the course of the game. So play on, all right? I mean, yeah, except for that's not what happened, right? That's not what you did. That's not what happened. Now, why am I bringing this up? Why am I in what is the most important segment of the radio show, the 15 minutes before you all get to the office and clock in, why am I bringing up a Florida State story? Because it's not a Florida State story. It's a college football story. The point that I am making here is you disillusioned, if you're Florida State, a lot of your fan base. You took the shine off the apple for your lot of fan base because while y'all, if you're not a Florida State fan, look at this and go, who the hell cares? You would care if it was your thing, right? You would care if it was your thing. Could you imagine the reaction if a news story dropped today that said the Clemson football team was 0-2, hypothetically, theoretically, but if Clemson was 0-2 like Florida State is, and a press clipping came out that said that the football team asked the athletic department not to make them leave the locker room, get on buses to drive to the other side of the stadium to then get off the buses and run down the hill. If they said, we just want to come out of the locker room, right? Because the Clemson locker room, which I was in it a couple of weeks ago, the Clemson locker room has a door that opens right onto the field. They can just walk out of there on the field.
So maybe they decide for safety concerns because it's treacherous running down that hill that it would be safer to go just come out of the locker room.
Sure. For the sake of comparison, let's just say that they didn't want to do it. Pick your reason. Let's say that the football team said, for us to get dressed, strap on the cleats, walk out the door, go out through the front door of the locker room, through the exit to the stadium, get on tour buses, which means that we got big-ass full-grown men sitting side-to-side on tour buses wearing full football gear to drive around the stadium to then get right back off the bus, to walk through people to get to the top of that hill, then run down when we could just open that door and be there. We don't want to do it anymore. I suspect there'd be a reaction to that, right? I suspect there would be a reaction. What if the Gamecock football team came out one day and said, you know what? We want to get rid of Space Odyssey. We want Machine Gun Kelly to play us onto the field. What if they said, we don't want y'all bumping to Sandstorm anymore, right? We want Lil Wayne to play, not Sandstorm. You'd be a little bit upset, without a doubt. Here's the point that I'm making. College football programs are going to find themselves increasingly in a very interesting position. This also goes hand in hand, toe to toe, with what we talked about with what's happened at Colorado this week, right? Colorado put out this thing that said, Deion Sanders did not ask our band to not play the fight song after Shador touchdowns. What he asked was that we don't play for a minute after Shador touchdowns so we can play his song. And I told you, you as a college football program, over the next few years, and I think this is going to be something you see more and more frequently, are going to find yourself in a very interesting position. The very interesting position you're going to find yourself in is that you're going to be asked by players to make more concessions on their behalf, right? You're going to have players that are going to say, hey, when I score a touchdown, can you play my rap song so that I can sell some albums as a part of my NIL deal? You are going to be asked by players to do more things. Hey, after touchdowns, I want to do this. Can I hold up a sign of my primary NIL sponsor? Instead of coming to the sideline to get a Gatorade, can you hand me a Dr. Pepper bottle so I can show them that I'm the mayor of Fansville? This is going to become more and more common. And what Florida State is learning right now, what Mike Norvell is learning right now, is that if you let the football players call the shots and the football players start calling shots in a way that runs contrary to what the fans want, you better be bringing them hardware. You better be bringing them wins. Because if you are not bringing them wins and you say, hey, we don't care. We don't care about how you feel about this tradition. We don't care about how you feel about this song or this dance or this activity or this pregame ceremony or this, that, and the other. We want to do our own thing. You better be winning the people trophies. Because if you don't, you're going to have a fan base turn against you. Mike Norvell is a guy that went this offseason from signing a big extension with Florida State. And I do believe he signed that extension because when Nick Saban retired, Alabama was coming for Mike Norvell after what he did for Florida State last year. And Florida State said, we got to make him an offer that Alabama won't want to match. The problem is you locked him in for 4 years at a big, big number. Florida State can't do anything about it. So if they end up this season, because do you think for a second Florida State's done losing? I don't.
Probably not.
I don't.
It looks pretty bad.
Florida State's a 1.5-point favorite over Memphis this weekend, and that's in Tallahassee. That ain't on the road. 1.5-point favorite. That means Memphis is 1.5 better, according to the folks that are betting. Now, you don't think Clemson right now, after what they did, hanging 60-plus on Appy State? What do you think Clemson's going to do to Florida State down in Tallahassee? They're going to smoke them. It ain't going to be close, right? And on top of that, there's other teams on the FSU schedule, Louisville, et cetera, that are looking at this team and going, they're down. This is our chance to get a little bit of revenge, right? Cal just beat Auburn. You don't think Cal wants to make their introduction known when Florida State comes out to the left coast to play? You don't think number 10 Miami doesn't want revenge for what Florida State's been doing to them the last couple of years? You don't think Notre Dame hosting? Notre Dame's got to win some impressive games to get back into a playoff spot after they lost.
Come on, they're done.
I don't think they're done. They have one loss.
Okay.
They can sneak in at number 11, number 12. They can't lose again. They will have to be undefeated the rest of the ride. Getting Florida State, even if it's bad Florida State, and hanging 50 on them is a style point win for Notre Dame. They need all they can get. Hell, I'm not sure Florida State can beat Florida right now. I think Florida might be a better team than Florida State. Point is, FSU might have 4, 5, 6 more losses coming down the pipe minimum. Minimum. Maybe more. So, when I'm watching Norvell, who allowed his football team to effectively poo-poo one of the most recognizable Florida State traditions while going 0-2, the fan base is rebelling right now. The fan base is having conversations down in Tallahassee about whether they should fire Mike Norvell, who went 13-0 last year and won them their first AC title game in a very, 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 very long time.
Yeah, but what if he doesn't win a game?
I mean, is there a world Florida State goes? I don't think Florida State's going 0-12. I think it's, what if they go 5-7? What if they go 4-8? Memphis is a 1.5-point dog in Tallahassee. Cal just beat Auburn. They can beat them. SMU, I think we all bought the farm on SMU. They're just not good. Clemson can beat them. I think they can beat Duke. Miami can beat them. North Carolina can beat them. Notre Dame can beat them. Charleston Southern, probably a win. Florida can beat them. What if Florida State ends this season, Lonzo, 3-9? Worst season in Florida State history.
He's probably gone.
You got to think, but they're locked in for so much damn money. I don't know that they can make him gone, right? And then you do all this and take away one of FSU's most proud traditions? Not great, Bob.
Well, at least I bet all the assistant coaches at least would be gone.
Oh, for sure. There would be a massive overhaul. Ain't no doubt about that. Lulu Kasson of the Greenville News joins us in the next segment to talk South Carolina taking on the LSU Tigers this weekend over in the Cola. Before we get there, Lonzo about to wow you, dazzle you, enlighten you, educate you, inform you, and make your morning better with his sports flash.
You're welcome. Regardless of how the regular season ends, the Braves will play most of the remainder without All-Star Ronaldo Lopez. Lopez was moved from his last start against Cincinnati with shoulder tightness after coaches noticed his fastball had lost roughly 5 miles per hour of velocity. That's bad. The team placed him on the 15-day DL as a precaution, citing shoulder inflammation. Atlanta recalled righty Deisbal Hernandez to fill the spot in the rotation. The NFL's audience numbers from week one were up from last year, with games averaging 21 million viewers per contest, making it the most watched week one on record. The league and Nielsen said that the per game average across all platforms was up a total of 12% from last season. Hey, tune in Saturday at 12:30 as the Furman Paladins take on the Stetson Hatters. It's Furman versus Stetson right here on your home for Paladins football, The Fan, Upstate.